Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello everyone and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's our final podcast of the season. It's been a long one, but hopefully it's been a fun one. I'm your host Matt Clark, delighted to be joined by two of our pod specialists, Roman Darquer and Paco Pollitt. Hello gentlemen, how are you?
Hi Matt, good morning.
We can't actually see Paco because he's had an incident with a baby, so we'll leave
small
it at
incident.
That.
Small, not that pretty incident. Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
Hi Matt. Matt, it's good to be here for the last pod. It's been a bit of a drag at the end, I'd say, the league, at least from a Barca perspective, because of course it felt like all of these games at the end weren't very important, and before winning it just felt like it was a matter of time. You know, Barca got those few points to seal the deal, but now we can look forward to the transfer market, which is annoying for some and entertaining for others.
Indeed, it's already well underway. Got a piece on our Substack this morning about exactly that and how clubs have already made some moves, loan deals made permanent, players returning after being away, all things like that. But yeah, I mean, we're two happy guests here because Roman, Barca won the league, and Paco, Valencia stayed up. So we'll start with the title. I would say it was a title race, but to be honest, it kind of ceased to be that from kind of March onwards, didn't it, really? Roman, first of all, from you, how does it feel for Barca to be champions again 4 years on? It's 4 years in a row the title has changed hands, so it's kind of good for the competition. Everyone says it's a two-team league, but maybe not so much. Barca, an incredible season. They won it at a canter in the end.
Yeah, I think it was surprising to see Barca win it so comfortably, especially seeing where we were coming from. But in the end, I think it was fantastic. I think it was much needed for the squad, for the club as a whole, you know, to try and move forward, to try and become a winning side at an international level, we could say, playing in Europe, of course. So I think this can definitely give the players a morale boost. Xavi was saying that the team needed this to feel like winners, and now that he said the players feel like winners, so this can really kind of help that mentality next year going into the Champions League. So I think in that sense it was really good. But again, I also have to point out that Madrid really disappointed. It feels like at some point they kind of gave up and focused on the Champions League. They put all their efforts there, which in the end didn't work out very well. And I also felt like they lost a bit of Vinicius, we could say, on the field, you know, because he started the season really well. He was probably going to be the player of the season at the end. He didn't seem as focused. I guess all the racism thing, all the complaining during matches, everything that happened surrounding his figure kind of affected Madrid as a whole, I think, because they needed him to perform, because Benzema maybe didn't have his best season. He had lots of injuries, ups and downs. So they needed Benitez to step up. And in the end, unfortunately for them, it didn't happen. I think this allowed Barca to kind of pull away. And, you know, they almost even lost that second spot to Atletico Madrid. So it was definitely a very poor season for them. And Barca can be happy and look forward and try and improve the squad, because they obviously will want to win the title again. And now they have to just try and be better competing in Europe.
Mm. Yeah, targets for next season for sure. We spoke about improving the squad. One player who won't be arriving is Leo Messi, and Roman, you've written a piece on our Substack about exactly that as well. We've all seen the rumours and the repeated stories that they were doing everything they can to bring him home, and the viability plan was going to be approved, and then suddenly, yeah, the guarantees weren't quite there, so Messi decides to go to Miami, and it's a real shame for neutrals, I think, as well as for Barcelona fans. Paco, how do you see that? The title race in general, and then obviously the news that Messi will not be coming back.
I think it was very smart by Barca to just shift focus into the La Liga efforts and just try to forget the, you know, the trips and the, I don't know, the problems that they faced in other competitions, because ultimately if you face their performance this year only If La Liga counts, obviously it's a routing success, but in both the Champions League and the Europa League, where they were, you know, expected to perform at a certain level, they disappointed, especially in the Europa League, because I believe that after seeing how the competition developed later and Sevilla getting into the final and winning it, I think that Barca could have perfectly been that side, but something didn't click in those competitions. Also in Copa del Rey, ultimately they were facing Real Madrid and they got knocked out. So I think it was very smart by Xavi once they got to, I believe, February back then, when all of their different other targets this season couldn't be achieved, to just focus in La Liga and do it in spectacular fashion. I believe that the Barca season is going to be analyzed, especially in, you know, the performance of midfielders, also absent midfielders. I think it has plenty of merit doing so without Pedri in the final stretch of the year. Gavi's performance, Lewandowski more or less failing to live up to expectations, even though he has scored quite a lot of goals. But the crucial point here has been Xavi trying to tighten up the defense and getting Ter Stegen to be the keeper with less goals allowed. I think Barca have improved a lot at the back, and that has been crucial for them. But yeah, you know, that's the way things are analyzed over. Depending on the moment of the season where you do the assessment, speaking about Barca in March, maybe the bitterness of being knocked out in other competitions would have remained. But you know, at this point, after coasting in La Liga and the final stretch with Real Madrid really centering all of their efforts in other competitions, Barca just seemed mighty in the home competition, and that's a big advantage for them because it allows them to really build upon that success in the following seasons. Whereas for Messi's eventual drama and final departure, I think that one thing is to have the desire of doing something, and the other is, you know, actually being able to, you know, have the tools to do that. And it was always going to be a far-fetched dream to bring him back because of all of the financial stuff, not because of the, you know, chance of agreeing in a number of points. I think that the people in charge were, you know, on the same page in Messi's eventual return, but I think that the whole financial jigsaw was never going to be as easy to put together as the rest. So it's unfortunate, obviously, for Barca fans, but for La Liga, because I think his departure back in the day wasn't really the one that he deserved. And ultimately, he had to choose if staying in France, even though he wasn't really happy there, to find a new, you know, a new desire or new goals over in the US or in the Middle East, or be back in La Liga. His family wanted to be in La Liga, but eventually, as that is not going to be able to happen, he has found another home in the US, and I think that he's going to propel forward soccer, as they call it, obviously, European football, as we name it, in the following years, and it's going to be very, very beneficial for the sport.
Mm. Yeah, we could probably do a whole podcast alone on the impact of Messi's arrival in the States, but for now, I just want to touch back on Real Madrid. It's hard to analyse their season, really, because, as you say, they kind of put all their eggs in the Champions League basket. They did win the UEFA Super Cup at the start of the season. They did win the Club World Cup at the start of the year. And then they did win the Copa del Rey at the for the first time in 10 years. But then on the flip side, as we say, they had a very poor defence of their league title. Pretty humiliated by Manchester City in the second leg of the Champions League semi-final. And there was that comprehensive defeat to Barca in the Supercopa. So, Roman, how do you really assess this season? Because, I mean, I think Toni Kroos said three trophies, so it's a good one, but it's not the three that you'd really... Well, it's certainly not the two that you want. Yeah, how do you read it? It's quite difficult to see how well we should judge the season.
It's difficult, honestly, because on the one hand, of course, three titles is definitely very positive, and it's not never easy to win those sorts of titles, but at the same time, you just see how poorly they did in La Liga, and it kind of unbalances everything a bit, you know. So, honestly, for me, at the end, I see Real Madrid, and I think they had a poor season, not just because how badly they did in La Liga, but also the way they got knocked out in the Champions League, you know. As you said, City practically humiliated them at a certain point, you know, and they didn't they didn't even compete. It's true that after the first leg, it was a wide open game. Anything could really happen if Madrid showed their best version, but it didn't really appear at any moment. And City had full control of the game, honestly, and deservedly won, you know. So, I mean, if at least Madrid had a very good game there, but City had won on pens or, you know, or last-minute goal or something like that, then you would kind of maybe see it in different eyes. Like, you know, Madrid competed in basically everywhere except for the league. But given how they left there, I think it hasn't been great for them. The other three titles are maybe... Well, they are easier titles to win, probably, compared to those two we just mentioned. So, I mean, as I said, it's never easy to win a title, but they don't have the same recognition the others have. So, in the end, we'll have to see what the club decides. They're already moving quite a lot of pieces, players that are leaving. Bellingham, apparently, is already on the move towards Real Madrid. So, I think that's a fantastic signing. And, from my perspective, very exciting to have him in La Liga, even though, of course, he's... at Real Madrid, but I still want to really looking forward to seeing him play and see how he develops outside of Germany and England, because we always say that English players tend to struggle a bit, you know, when they leave abroad and all that kind of thing. So Bellingham so far has proved he has tremendous quality and he's not that kind of player, and he can really adapt to another country. But now we'll see in a tougher competition such as La Liga if he can keep up this top level he's been showing. And then of course Madrid have other youngsters who need to step up, like Tchouaméni, like Camavinga. Benitez has already stepped up, but he needs to, you know, mentally, I think, sort himself out, try and not get as affected as we've seen him in games, even though, of course, it isn't easy. I mean, it's hard to go through people shouting all sorts of stuff at you, but, you know, it's happened, and I'm not justifying anything, but as a player on the field, he needs to do what's best for his club, and that's play at 100%. So, I mean, he has the quality, and they'll need him 100% next season to grow and to do better than this year.
Mm, potentially the leader of Real Madrid's attack. Paco, I suppose the big question for Real Madrid now is how will they cope without Karim Benzema? I mean, they've already, you know, said goodbye to Eden Hazard, Mariano Diaz and Asensio, and to a greater or lesser extent, those three players were useful or not. But yeah, Benzema is the big one, isn't it? He's already moved to Saudi Arabia, parading his Ballon d'Or in front of 60,000 fans at Al-Ittihad. There's rumours of Harry Kane, Kai Havertz, Roberto Firmino, plenty of names in the market as we expect at this time of season in the transfer window. Paco, how will Real Madrid replace Karim Benzema, their second all-time top goal scorer?
I think they will go Cuba Gooding Jr. on the market, and they will show everyone their money. You know, they have been able to save most of their expenses in the last couple of seasons. They haven't really signed, you know, properly, like in a big market for Real Madrid in quite a few years, because as everyone knows, they were trying to save some money in order to invest in the refurbishing and the new works in the Santiago Bernabeu. But they will have to do it this summer. They did already that signing of Bellingham, which should be official at any point. And they will have to do so in quite a few places too. I think that Benzema leaving is going to leave a big mark on the side, because his impact in Real Madrid wasn't really the one of a goal scorer. Ultimately, Benzema was that kind of all-around player who is able to, just from midfield onwards, be able to generate stuff just by being there, just by, you know, moving on the pitch, leaving his mark, passing around, scoring obviously, but he has been much more than a number 9 for quite a few years already, especially since Cristiano Ronaldo left. So swapping his contribution to the side and bringing in another player who is able to do the same is going to be impossible, because I think there isn't another player in European football or outside Europe who is able to deliver in the same way as Benzema when he is in form. So they will have to bring maybe two players with profiles which are able to, you know, be complementary in a number of ways. As Roman said, I think that Vinicius will have to step up to the plate and become the new leader for this side on the offense. And as he said too, I am, you know, 100% agree on the fact that whenever Vinicius is focused on the pitch, he can be one of the best, if not the best, in the world. But when he gets distracted by external affairs, he becomes a regular player. And in that sense, I think that both Real Madrid as a club and Ancelotti as the manager will need to put some special effort in that sense, because it has happened a number of ways this season, not only in the last stretch with everything which happened over and all of the drama surrounding his fed up over at Mestalla, but I think that it happened already a couple of times this season, and that distracts an elite player from his goal, which is ultimately winning, scoring, and becoming the best. And regarding the rest of the year, as Roman said, I think that ultimately the way they went out of the competitions is also not the best. I think in La Liga they just gave up because they had other priorities. In the Champions League they got crushed by Manchester City, and I think that it's possibly the most the biggest difference between two sides in a semi-final in quite a while, and that is going to hurt for a number of months. And it's unlucky that the only real, I would say, title which they really contended for, which is Copa del Rey, they actually didn't celebrate the title, because Osasuna were in front of them and they were fighting for their lives, trying to win their first Copa del Rey. And for Real Madrid, it just was another day in the office. And, Osasuna would have loved to win that title. Real Madrid was just, I'm playing for this. I win the game. I have another piece of silverware at home, and I don't really celebrate it. But yeah, I think that I wouldn't say the season has been a disappointment, but I think that the ending of the season, the final 2 months, have been not up to the standards which Real Madrid fans really demand from their side.
Very high standards they are too. Well, let's leave it there for the moment. After the break, we'll talk about Atletico Madrid, Real Sociedad, the European race, and of course the relegation battle, as well as Sevilla's remarkable campaign which ended in Europa League triumph. So we'll be back very shortly. Stay with us.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. I'm here with Roman Darquet and Paco Pollitt reviewing the 22-23 season. We had a World Cup in the middle of it, but it's fair to say Atletico Madrid were one of the better sides as the season came towards an end. They just missed out on second spot, although they probably deserved it. Roman, do you think they can challenge for the league title next season?
Well, so many factors can make that change. For example, the beginning of this season, I actually thought that Atletico de Madrid would be contenders. They had a phenomenal squad for me. They brought in some very good signings. They were very strong in different areas of the pitch, but in the end it just didn't work out. There was that connection between Joao and Cholo Simeone. It seemed like he was about to leave. Now the big question is Simeone going to leave or is he going to stay? At the moment, the rumors are pretty quiet on him leaving. I think I haven't seen too much saying that he might leave. I think that would be a big game changer if he left, and probably in a negative way, because I think Simeone and Atletico are meant to be one for the other. I think he's capable of getting the most out of that team, even though he might not play the football many consider that Atletico can't play, but with him in the squad, managing that team, I think they always have a good shot, you know, at winning a title such as La Liga. So we'll have to see what signings come in. We'll have to see what happens with Joao Felix. We'll have to see how the new players adapt. It's difficult to say, honestly, at this point. I think we need to see and check out what happens during the summer, what players come in, and evaluate from there on and decide according to the preseason how things go, you know, because Atletico will always be there because, you know, they have the capacity to sign good players. They're a strong European side. They're feared by many clubs, you know, and they always have that in themselves. And if they can improve maybe a bit more defensively, because we all knew that Cholo's teams were well known for being very, very solid at the back, and from there the counterattacks, etc. So if he can improve that solidness at the back for next season, if Griezmann can keep up this spectacular form, because for me in the end he's been the best player of the season, because he's been so good at the end. It's true, at the beginning of the season he didn't get much of a chance, because of course with Barca, you know, negotiating with Atletico Madrid, they didn't want him to play more minutes than he should. But in the end, once he had his playing time, he just showed that he's one of the best players there is. So if Griezmann keeps up the level and all that kind of thing, I think they'll definitely be contenders. We'll have to wait and see. And also depends, of course, on what Barca and Madrid do themselves, if they're capable of bringing in the players they wanted to improve or not. So a lot of factors there. And for me, right now, it's hard to specifically say if Atletico are going to be up there in the fight.
That's a very long way of saying I'm on the fence, but thank you very much. Very detailed analysis there. I think we'd all agree Griezmann was the best player of the season. As we say, Vinicius probably for the first half, and then certainly Griezmann kind of overtook him, and 31 goal involvements, more than any other player in the league. Paco, Real Sociedad have qualified for the Champions League for the first time in about a decade. How big an achievement is that from Imanol and his staff and his team?
I think it's been massive, because there was really, really fierce competition for quite a few months. You know, ultimately, when it came down to the last four or five games, it was, you know, in Real Sociedad's hands to achieve the goal or to let it go. But I think that for most of the season, it's been, you know, a fierce challenge for all of the teams involved. There was a point where Real Betis seemed mighty, you know. Also, Villarreal really came very strong from that starting stumbles at the beginning of the season, and they became once again European contenders. I remember Athletic Club; they had a good run of games. Osasuna for a while was also a contender for that spot. So, I think it has plenty of merit for Real Sociedad, for Imanol Alguacil, once again showing that he might be, if not the best manager, because I think Simeone has done a great job, also Xavi has done a great job, but in my book, Iago Arrasate has been the best of the season. But Imanol is right up there, you know, one of the top three, four managers of La Liga, because there was a point where Real Sociedad were very, very reliable when playing at home. They created that kind of fortress whenever playing at the Real Arena at Anoeta. And many players have been able to live up to the standards. Remember, they signed their marquee striker back in August, Umar Sadiq, and they lost him in the second game. And they lost him for 7-8 months, you know. So they have been able to produce and get results with most of their attacking front injured or MIA. Back in October, November, December, there was a point where they were playing, nine-less football. They didn't have a reference striker because they just didn't have the players. But that second line of players with Take Kubo, who has had a massive season in my book too, Silva also, after he recovered in the midfield, he has done great. I don't know, overall, the way the team has performed privilege the level of the whole side and not only individual players, and that has been the brilliance of Real Sociedad, and that's why I believe that you know, earning that fourth place is absolutely deserved for them. But I have my own doubts regarding their performance the following year, because most of the time these kind of teams have problems when they have to compete in three competitions, which are, you know, of the level of demand and performance expected as Champions League, Copa del Rey, and La Liga. They always suffer. And that's why I fear that the following year is going to be tough for Real Sociedad. But for the moment, I think that Churi Urdin fans have all of the right to enjoy and to celebrate and to, you know, squeeze all of that European football that they are going to enjoy on the 23-24 season.
Yeah, really looking forward to seeing how they get on in the Champions League season. As you say, note of caution for the reaching those levels in multiple competitions, but let's hope they can achieve it. As we touched on there, Betis and Villarreal completed the Europa League spots and Osasuna made it to the Conference League. Roman, there's been some news this week that they might even be banned from entering the competition, though, due to from 2014 about some match fixing, is it? Or what's the story there?
Well, yeah, apparently there was something related to match fixing back in the days, and they were reviewing it. Basically, it happened back in 2014. And they're going to review this and decide whether Osasuna will be capable of playing the Champions League. But it kind of feels a bit weird that they're looking at this now. I don't really understand why this has come up at this stage. It's true that, of course, they've qualified now to Europe. And I guess that's the reason behind it. But, I mean, if they got to find them in a way, why didn't they do it back? I don't know. It just feels awkward that now poor Osasuna had such a fantastic season and they worked so hard. It's not easy at all to make it to a final in a competition like the Copa del Rey and at the same time keep performing in La Liga. Usually teams that go for another competition such as the Europa League or the Copa del Rey, etc., and that don't have a deep or strong squad like maybe other teams like maybe Villarreal, Betis, etc., do have, sometimes they struggle, you know, and they tend to drop positions. But Arrasate, in that sense, for me, as Paco said, one of the best managers this season, has done a phenomenal job in getting the team to fight every single game to stay up there. And in the end, you know, a very well-deserved Conference League spot. And for me, it would be phenomenal to see them play there. I would really love that. They've already been started moving in the transfer market. They're bringing Catena from Rayo Vallecano, who I think is a very smart signing, very good centre-back. I think he can really help the team. And, of course, there are going to be other interesting pieces coming in to improve this squad, which has been really, really good. But I don't know, I'm just a bit disappointed that this takes place now and that they can be affected by this sanction, because honestly, you know, it's true that maybe the people in charge now aren't to blame. I don't know if it's the same guys leading the club, but still massive disappointment for the fans, for the players, you know, all the effort they've put into this season, seeing how it might just blow away and they might not get that unique opportunity, because it's not every year that you see Osasuna playing in Europe. You know, maybe they won't qualify back to Europe in the next decade or so. So hopefully this doesn't go any further and they're not sanctioned, because I'd love to see them playing.
Well, Spain will have 8 teams in Europe next season, because Sevilla, of course, won the Europa League, which means they are the 5th side in the Champions League. And if Osasuna do get the ban, then Athletic Club will be the club that replaces them in the Conference League. Now, I'm conscious of time. I'd love to talk more about Sevilla and Mendilibar. We'll maybe come back to that at the very end and talk about coaches. But we do have to press on to the relegation battle. If you want more Sevilla fans, we did a podcast after the Europa League final, Paco and myself. So go and check that out. It's on our Substack feed. You'll be able to find it there. Relegation battle, Paco. Of course, delighted to see Valencia safe in the end. It was Elche, Espanyol and Real Valladolid who ultimately went down. What a dramatic final couple of jornadas we had there.
Yeah, it went down to just a matter of details. And actually, there were a number of moments in the last games where, depending on the results, I believe a couple of disallowed goals for Elche just left Valencia hanging in there. If Valladolid scored, Valencia were on the relegation spots, which was, you know, pretty amazing. Especially if you see the history of these teams and all of the, you know, all of the seasons that they have remained in La Liga. But it just came down to the, as we say, the photo finish in this race, and Valladolid was ultimately the one to go. Which is unfortunate, because for a number of weeks it seemed that they were clear from danger, you know. But I think that this year the relegation battle has been very cruel with anyone who relaxed just a tiny bit, and Espanyol suffered the, you know, the rigors of this of this fact. Also Valladolid, Almeria just scraped barely through with 41 points and they remained in the competition. Valencia did so. Getafe, you know, delivered in spades the promise that Bordalás brought in the last 6-7 games with that champagne football in the last game against Valladolid, which was the perfect encapsulation of what Bordalás really means, you know. Shithousery, nothing played, 20% ball possession, but no shots on target by Valladolid, which is absolutely massive for a game where Valladolid are just playing for their lives. But that's what Bordalás brought to the table. Also, Cádiz, once again, just another season they are able to make it through. And Celta de Vigo, which with 43 points, they beat Barca in the last match day, even though Barca were really just thinking on their holidays. And which really meant that Celta were the best side of the pack of those six teams which were on risk of dropping to Segunda, but it doesn't save Carlos Carvajal from, you know, departing on, which is just breaking news on that front. Carvajal and Celta departing and parting ways, because Celta didn't really deliver on that promise. When Carlos Carvajal came mid-season in the first third of the season, the way Celta played, the way they, you know, just delivered on the pitch, made them to be, in my book, European competition candidates and not really relegation zone contenders. But the way they dropped the ball and the last 3 months have been awful for their fan base. And that's why I think that it's smart for you know, just part ways and to try to shift gears regarding the following season. Valladolid, it seems like Ronaldo Nazario had already some sort of deal in place if they remained in La Liga in order to sell the largest share, the largest number of shares, and, you know, get rich in the process. That seems not going to happen with Valladolid in Segunda División. Let's see what the future beholds for them. And the Espanyol, I don't know. They are on the right to be complaining about the referees and the calls that they got, because they were pretty much appalling most of the time. But you also have to see if really appointing Luis García in the last stretch of the competition was the smartest move, because I have the perfect example of that. Rubén Baraja for Valencia. More or less it's the same example, but Baraja just scraped through and Luis García fell short. You know, 37 points that game against Valencia. They were very, very inconsistent, especially at the back. They left, you know, their defense mostly open most of the time with that Lino goal in the 90th minute. I don't know. Espanyol didn't really do their homework and they fell to Segunda because of that. And finally, we have Elche, which really performed well when they were already in Segunda with Bekacheke as the manager. Or is Bekaseche? I don't really know.
Bekacheche.
The way to spell it. Bekacheche, okay. He's going to be the architect in Segunda División. He has already stated that. And, you know, as the president is a friend of him, I think that he will have full support. But, you know, Elche have been a mess all around the season. And even though they managed to leave on a high note in the last 2 months, I would say, they never stood the chance. As we said, I believe, at the beginning of the season, they were, most of us had Elche as their number one contender for dropping to Segunda. So all around, maybe the best relegation battle in 10-15 years, but, you know, the drama over in Valladolid was painful to watch.
Indeed it was. Well, they have been replaced by Granada and Las Palmas, who are promoted automatically from Segunda. They will be joined by one of Levante or Alavés, who face off in the Segunda playoffs, which of course still continue. We've also got the Nations League coming up. Spain take on Italy to try and find a way to the final to potentially win that trophy. Luis de la Fuente potentially under pressure. But as we come towards the close, I'll just some one-word answers, please. Roman, your coach of the year.
Well, as I mentioned before, I actually have two. One is Alguacil, and the other one is Arrasate. For me, those two have been phenomenal.
Paco?
Those two, and in addition to those two, I will say Xavi has done a great job. And also, I would have never thought about this, Quique Setién. I think the way Villarreal bounced back was pretty amazing, and I didn't expect that.
Indeed. Roman's smiling there. He's a big fan of Setien, of course. How about on the flip side then, Roman, your biggest disappointment of the season can be player, club, or coach?
My biggest disappointment, I think it has to be Diego Martinez. I think I really had high hopes on him doing a good job at Espanyol, seeing how well things went at Granada, and seeing that there was an interesting project at least behind Espanyol. But despite all the players they brought in and all the excitement there, it worked out very, very poorly.
Mm. And Paco, for you?
Sampaoli, hands down, because Sevilla had the raw power and football quality to achieve real great things, but Sampaoli was never really the ideal manager to extract that potential.
Good call. Well, we've already mentioned Carvajal leaving the club, leaving Celta. We've also had Rubi leaving Almeria. And of course, thirdly, we had Andoni Iraola leaving Rayo. So three clubs looking for new coaches. We'll see if Diego Martinez is in contention for any of those for next season. We've said goodbye to many legends of La Liga: Joaquin, Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba, Mateo Laoz, Eden Hazard. Oh, wait, no. So it's been...
He's a legend in his own way.
Indeed.
You know.
It never played a single minute in a Clasico. That is a quiz question in 10 years' time, for sure. We have to come to the end of the pod because we are running out of time. But thank you very much to you both, to Roman and to Paco. It's been a pleasure to talk to you throughout the season. Thank you to listeners for subscribing, listening, retweeting, everything. We really appreciate your support. We'll be back in the new season. It won't be very long now. Give us about a month or so to recover from a very long season, and we'll be back. From all of us here, have a great summer. Enjoy the transfer window. It's already started, so, you know, here we go. And it's adios from us.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.